The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Podcast Network. Geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by A Comic Shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, Nerdapalooza, the world's largest nerd music festival, and with the generous support of listeners like you. For more Nerdy Show podcasts, community forums, and learn how you can support this and other fine Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
Hi, I'm Jason Aaron. I write Thor, God of Thunder, and other books about dudes with big hammers, and you're listening to Nerdy Show.
Hi, I'm Cap.
Hi, I'm Hex.
Hey, I'm Doug.
I'm Kristen.
I'm John.
And I'm Kay.
Welcome to a Nerdy Show microsode. It's actually going to be a full-sized episode, but it was a microsode that got us here, and that's the kind of random crazy chance that can happen if you suggest a topic for a Nerdy Show microsode. And what you just heard coming in was our brand new theme song composed by NY Tune Saloon. We debuted it on Nerdy Show Live. And that's what you're going to be hearing, introing all of our shows. Nerdy Show is a weekly podcast dedicated to every facet of nerddom, from comics and video games to science and technology. If it's geeky, we've got it covered. And today we're going to talk about steampunk. This episode's requested by Kevin Wise. And Kevin, you are in luck, sir.
Yay.
It's not very often that we get to do a microsode where a Nerdy Show fan requests a topic because they have generously supported us and pushed us over $100 mark. But you requested a topic. And coincidentally, we found ourselves in a position to do a pretty high-profile interview.
You rolled a 20 on this steam-powered dice.
Yes. Yes, you did. So in this episode, we're not just going to be talking about steampunk. We're also going to be talking with Matthew James Daly, Trevor Crafts, and notable actor and Tron, Bruce Boxleitner.
Well, we're talking to Tron?
Well, I was talking to Tron.
Oh.
At San Diego Comic-Con.
He's steam-powered?
He is now.
Oh my gosh.
That's awesome.
The reason we have these guys on this episode is that they are working on a television series called Lantern City, which is to be the first major steampunk body of work in television or film. Details about it and how it will actually appear in reality with actors moving around and sets and everything, they're vague yet, but they've actually started a internet campaign where they are fan sourcing, working with the steampunk community to make the ultimate steampunk experience.
Oh, damn.
That's pretty awesome.
It's very, very unusual. So I talked with these guys and found out what it was all about and how Bruce Boxleitner fits into the equation. So first, let's lay the groundwork a little bit. Let's talk about the genre of steampunk. I don't think any of us here are avidly involved in the culture itself.
Avidly, no.
But
I have a lot of friends who are very deep in it.
Steampunkers?
Yeah, they dress up and they go to conventions, and it's always an aesthetic that I've admired. It's just not something that I've ever dressed up for.
It's interesting seeing steampunk grow over time. I saw it start and I was like, well, that's interesting. Victorian machinery and all that, that's really cool. And then it became this thing that was very comparable to Renfest level of obsession.
Yeah.
Except that maybe even more so, because Rennies are all about going to Renfest, and that's typically, unless they're LARPing, when they're in their costumes and everything. But steampunk fans, they don't necessarily have that outlet. So any convention is their time to wear the garb and the goggles and the monocles and spats and whatever else.
Well, it also seems to me that Renaissance fairs versus steampunk, at least with steampunk, you have a lot of creative freedom to just make up anything you want.
That's true.
Because, like, if Renaissance fair, you can't make, I invented a Renaissance gun. You know, at steampunk, I've seen a couple things at different conventions where they knocked off weapons and stuff from Ghostbusters. And they knocked off things from other science fiction stories, but just the steampunk version. And they're all equally valid.
You have to think, too, that there are a lot of different versions of steampunk. It's not necessarily, there's like a bunch of different categories of it. So you have like the Victorian fantasy or the gaslamp fantasy, cattlepunk. You have like a wide, vast
cattlepunk
selection.
I've never heard that. Yeah. I have no idea what that is.
I know dieselpunk.
Like,
but
Victorian futurism. There's a bunch of different stuff. You have like more of the futuristic setting with the still steam powered machinery, or you have the Victorian setting that has the beginnings of technology, or that just haven't gotten to that point yet. They're like the very Jules Verne, and then you have more of the, like, I want to say Firefly was kind of steampunky.
It had a tinge of steampunk, definitely in the influence.
Is robots and cowboys cattlepunk? Is that what cattlepunk is?
That's what I'm thinking. It's very westerny, a lot of more like American frontier based.
Wild Wild West. Steampunk.
Yeah, like you westerny.
I think Wild Wild West, the movie, would actually be a perfect example since it's got so much steam power in it.
Yeah. I mean, literally, because his wheelchair is steam powered. Yeah. The spider is steam powered.
This is a completely unironic assessment.
Yeah, I'm not judging. I'm just saying.
Yeah,
it's unfortunate, but true.
I love that movie though. I really liked it. I like the aesthetic of it. I didn't care about the story or anything. I just really liked how it looked. You can also think that
that's the only nice thing anybody's ever said about it.
Right?
It's not untrue.
And an incredibly good song. Good theme song.
And then we have movies like Baron von Munchausen and you have Time Bandits, a lot of the Terry Gilliam movies. Brazil, they're still somewhat gaslampy, steampunk.
He always has that kind of punk motif because like you kind of had that.
I called it like junk punk for a little bit, but like,
I would definitely say that 12 Monkeys is junk punk.
Yeah.
Junk punk.
And as we now sort of get into the whole punk debate, right?
Well, and actually 12 Monkeys is, I like to think that like junk punk does fit in a way, but 12 Monkeys is also time travel cyberpunk.
Well, I just say junk punk because everything is just so, like it feels like, it's so slapped together so quickly and it just feels like the underground place is a junk pile.
That's literally the future.
Are you guys aware of the forthcoming Terry Gilliam movie, since we're on the topic and I never get to talk about Terry Gilliam? He's got a movie coming out called Zero Theorem.
I've seen the early trailer for it. I think I saw a trailer for it and I was very impressed, and as usual had no idea what it was about by the end of it.
That was a lot of people getting real excited all on top of each other.
It's Terry Gilliam. Of course we're going to get excited real quick.
I just got the Criterion Collection of Brazil the other day.
Yes. So good. That's a straight up Laserdisc port. So you have the glory of Laserdisc to thank for that 3-disc edition.
Wasn't Laserdisc steam powered at one point? I think it was.
I think it may have been.
Awesome.
It only makes sense that you'd be playing discs the size of Victrolas. So
tangent, we still need to watch the Street Fighter movie on Laserdisc.
Hey, give it time, man. It'll happen.
I have it.
Laserdisc ain't going nowhere. That format's staying around forever. Something we should mention is that years ago, like early season three Nerdy Show, back when we had seasons, I don't even what year, maybe 2010.
Yeah, the interview with Dr. Steele.
Yeah, we had an episode called Never Mind the Gearbox where we talked for an entire episode about, at least I think we did. I honestly don't.
Different Realms of Punk.
Barely remember what happened, but yeah, Different Realms of Punk. Steampunk, diesel punk, and we interviewed Dr. Steele about being a mad scientist who makes mechanical things.
An army of toys.
Yes. So we'll link to that oldie, but hopefully a goodie. So steampunk has just grown over the years, just absolutely grown. I mean, on the convention bingo, I don't remember the last time I looked at a convention bingo sheet, but certainly if you want to get drunk real quick, put steampunk costume on there, you'll knock it off. And I don't know, I guess convention bingo doesn't necessarily involve drinking. I just imagine it does. But basically, steampunk is a staple. Steampunk is a staple of a certain corner of nerd culture, and it's spread out in everything. And every mini stories across pop culture have tinges of steampunk. There have been X-Men stories in alternate realities with steampunk. I think Warren Ellis did that, actually, was one of his X-Men
Ignition
stories.
Ignition City? Wait, no, not with...
No, Ignition
I'm sorry.
City...
I'm thinking of something completely different. Excuse me.
Ignition City was space punk, but there was the...
Specifically diesel punk, but with space? I don't know. Anyway...
I wouldn't say diesel punk, but the categories don't really matter. Captain Spring? What was that?
Spring Heel Jack, but it wasn't called Spring Heel Jack.
Captain Swing is what it was called.
I
loved it. And it was very electric punk, where it's just like...
Electro, like...
Just Tesla coils and stuff?
Yeah, like the same era, time era, except instead of using everything with steam powered, it's all using like very Tesla-centric like electricity. And so Captain Swing is very, like, I guess, Tesla punk.
So is really the only difference between steampunk and diesel punk just one steam powered, the other is like gasoline diesel powered?
BioShock is what I would pitch as being diesel punk.
It's like time period.
I wouldn't say BioShock.
Really.
Like,
there's actually entire blogs about diesel punk aesthetic. It's all stuff from like, you know, World War I, World War II,
right.
Like, you know, whereas steampunk basically goes from Industrial Revolution style aesthetic.
Okay. So it's more
this
about
is more like polished airplane, you know, like the aluminum fuselage, that kind of stuff.
It's more about the time period that it lives from as opposed to what's powering the machine.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
But it's also that
nobody cares about, you know, technology really that much, right? Like, it's all like the mentality, the morals, the ethics of the time period, you know, like, oh, yeah.
But it's also that power source was kind of like the blood of that era.
Right. Okay.
Right.
And so but, that's but why they're tied
everything
together.
Everything that goes along with it, right?
Trying to figure out what defines it from a guy who's on the outside. How will I be able to look at something and say,
but that is a good
that's
question.
Definitely,
like,
that's steampunk, there, that's like, diesel punk, that's cyber. I know what cyberpunk
there's
is.
There's cyberpunk, but. There's diesel punk, there's steampunk, there's all these punks. There isn't really anything before Victorian England that I can think of.
Because it's probably uncomfortable because it's slave punk. That's no one wants to do that.
I think another major element here is that all these things are technological artifacts of times lost. Basically, that are then, you know, integrated into more modern settings so that we can, like, relate to it.
I'm playing around with alternative futures.
You hit before the technological era begins and when industry starts and everything, and you get to just sort of heightened medieval fantasy, maybe medieval fantasy with guns, you know,
like culture,
Fable 3,
fan fiction of fan fiction kind of thing.
A serious question, though, if Wild Wild West is like unofficially steampunk, that's like one of the bigger things. What are some of the bigger things in video games? Like, we mentioned BioShock as being like diesel, maybe steampunk.
I don't think BioShock is that steampunk. I would think more.
I'd put it under diesel punk, where it's like definitely a echo.
It's like the right era, record players or other like the tapes and all that kind of stuff that they had.
Anything for a layman like me to be like, what can I look at in the general widespread media and be like, oh, so that's what you call steampunk.
Is there a steampunk?
Dishonored. What?
Dishonored?
Of course. Dishonored's totally there. Steampunk's really a lot about clockwork mechanisms. The gear is pretty much like its symbol.
Mist?
Mist is
maybe
bordering.
Elements.
Because Mist is definitely one of those, like you were talking about, remixes, where it's like a little piece from here, a little piece from there.
Mm. You could certainly squish Mist into that, but Mist doesn't have many of the pillars needed
to
really.
Not like pure steampunk. It's just like elements of what. Well, it's also a puzzle game, so it's
also
supposed to be confusing.
A big thing in steampunk seems to be airships.
Mm. Plenty of anime
course,
got
the
that.
The other facet, air power.
Is that
one of the great failed technologies?
So, is there a lot of anime that's steampunk then? Because I've seen like
Steam Boy and
Steam Boy's so good. Ugh,
really shocked at how good it was. But yeah, Steam Boy's definitely on that list.
Or as best friend Bob refers to it, thermodynamics lad.
What about I saw Howl's Moving Castle. Everything in there seemed to run on steam.
Yeah, but there's also like heavy amounts of magic. So
that's like cauldron punk.
But then you have to think too, like a lot of
steam punk. Steam cauldrons.
That now has cauldron, a trademark nerdy shit. Show after it. Cauldron punk.
So wait, is Glampire cauldron punk?
He is now.
I think he is.
I don't know. I don't know about that.
Is this magic? I don't know.
I like it.
Now, how can we wrap all this around to Pirates of Blackwater?
Pirates of Darkwater. Okay,
that one.
That's what I was talking about, that medieval fantasy mashup stuff that predates industry. It just falls all into the fantasy realm. Like, that's all it gets. But
there's actually a comic called Lady Mechanica that's put out by Aspen that's steampunk.
Yeah, yeah. I met the guy who draws it. He's a very good artist and a really awful drunk.
I wouldn't know him personally, but I like his art.
Yeah, he's a very talented artist. There's a video online of him called Steam Drunk.
Well, it was last year, 2 years ago, that remake of the Three Musketeers that was like totally steampunked out.
Oh, just The Musketeer?
Yeah, something like that. It looked miserable. It was very steampunky and had a lot of airships.
I think that like the Wild Arms series was pretty steampunky, but it's more Western, futuristic, less steam.
I guess the conclusion we're reaching is that steampunk, you know it when you see it, but you can't really describe it.
Clockwork shit, airships, maybe guns that shoot electricity.
Goggles. But like suddenly, if I were to say, all right, well, I'm throwing in magic in there, then it's like, well, that doesn't really fit. And then
Victorian industrial fantasy.
Well, you think that like a lot of the Cthulhu mythos and stuff fits in well with the steampunk ideology, and it's kind of magic-y.
Mm-hmm.
They walk close to each other. Because of the era that they're spawned from. But once again, steampunk, the kind of like main steampunk mentality seems to be triumphing ingenuity and technology while
looking stylish.
While like Lovecraftian based media.
Because I always assumed the Lovecraftian mythos was very hand in hand with the steampunk.
Well, Lovecraft was more like the 1920s as opposed to like the 1800s. I mean, there is stuff there, but most of it took place in a slightly more contemporary setting.
Anyway, it's high time we cut to a track. So what do you got for us, X?
Actually, what I have is a track from Professor Elemental.
Okay. That's a different professor.
Chap hop rapper.
Oh my God.
This track is called Steam Powered.
We are inundated by subgenres.
But he's basically the closest thing you have to a steampunk rapper. Because he is a gentleman rhymer.
Okay. Gentleman rhymer sounds pretty badass.
I mean, there's also Mr. B who claims he's the gentleman rhymer. And he's also pretty amazing, has a wicked mustache, and plays a ukulele.
Let the listeners be the judge of that.
They actually have a beef.
Oh, shit.
And they duel.
Well, and actually, I'm glad you brought it up, since we're talking about Victorian England before we cut to a track.
That was a bit of a segue for you.
Thank you. You're very welcome. Much, Hex. A good close friend of ours has a Kickstarter going on right now called A Duel Betwixt Us, which is a two-player card game of gentlemanly wit, in which you, as a aristocratic mustache twirler, will enlist the help of miners to mine ingots of gold, copper, and silver for you, so you can build weapons to smite your other gentlemanly opponent with whom you have a great disagreement of some kind and win the hand of a lady's favor.
Yes.
Anyhow,
I'm really excited for this.
That's on Kickstarter right now. We played a demo of it during Nerdy Show Live, Brandon and I, and it's completely funded. So if you want a copy of the game, now is the chance to strike. And there's all kinds of stuff that will be available exclusively in the Kickstarter before it goes to the stores. Not to mention you get it first.
Marvelous.
Anyway, we're going to cut to that chap hop fellow. And when we get back, we're going to be talking with Matthew James Daly, Trevor Crafts, and Bruce Boxleitner, the guys behind Lantern City.
So you'd like to know about steampunk, would you, Jennifer? I suppose I can teach you a thing or two. Yeah. You're all about steam and brass, and all you need to start is tea in a flask. Sharp set of gears and a gleaming arc, and a sky race heaving, screaming past. If you're all about reaching far, seeking the past on secret charts, meeting in secret beneath the stars with a decent mask and a good moustache. If you're really part of an army, marching armed for starting a party, a set of weapons so wondrous, and a specially constructed blunderbuss, so thunderous, but don't come to fuss. Got a wanderlust, and you're one of us. We bump steampunk, need one of these, jump freak powered, free fun, here come the steampunk.
Want to see some obsolete technology, brought this in slot machines. Then you wanna follow me up on an odyssey to the bottom of the sea, to the underwater colony, where we dock at the airlock's release. A mahogany lobby leads off into the property. Watch, you see the monstrosities of the deep, deep through the window that we walk beneath.
If you wish to see a little piece of history,
back in 2053, this would be Italy. Streets glittering prettily, just like a Christmas tree. Until the heat rose 6 degrees, now we're living in the middle of the drifting sea, using industries of antiquity, by which I mean wave energy, solar wind, and steam.
Under a tunnel and back in time, covered in soot and factory grime, all other groups to the back of the line, we are the future, in fact divine. Gleaming machinery seem to be reckoned with, every single member, excellent gentlemen, seen with a seamstress leading a steamship in between tea sips. People need this, because we're taking care of our crew like we do our facial hair. Being made aware, we're making improvements, don't call it a scene, it's more of a movement, more of an era, clearing the air, taking over and nearly there. Pirates, ladies, vagrants, fiends, welcome one and all to the age of steam.
Hey guys, it's Cap
and Trevor Crafts
and Matthew James Daly
and Bruce Boxleitner,
and we're here to talk about Lantern City and the companion book Rise. Lantern City is a concept for a forthcoming television show that's steampunk themed. Really sizable project by the looks of it.
By all means, yes it is.
And you guys have just released Rise, which is
the prequel novel. Yeah,
and it's an illustrated novel.
It is indeed.
That means a book with occasional pictures rather than, say, a graphic novel, or is it somewhere in between?
No, you're 100% right. It's got 26 full plate illustrations, and essentially it's an illustrated novel that has artwork from multiple different individuals, almost like an anthology, but it's all on the same subject matter, which is the creation of Lantern City.
Lantern City is a steampunk metropolis.
Megatropolis.
Mega.
Yeah. It's considered a megatropolis. This is essentially five cities that have to combine into one, and it is a world almost more than just a city. So it's huge. That's why I sort of create the, I don't know if I create the term, it's what I use. I know it's not a word because it always goes to red when I type it into Microsoft Word, but I call it a megatropolis.
Yes, megatropolis. And it's walled in.
Okay.
Most awesome looking wall.
So to protect it from the outside world, or?
Good question.
that's up to you as the audience.
Okay. But,
I personally tend to look at the wonderful plate that we have of it, the wonderful painting that we have of it. We're not keeping something out. Who are we keeping in?
Yeah. Okay. You know? And that's the interesting part about the story of Lantern City. The television series, very much like Matt often says, that it's like a gritty steampunk version of The Wire. So there's characters upon characters. There's multiple different stratas of society. And, you know, it really creates a very dynamic world with multiple different characters that are all intersecting with each other on lots of different levels. The TV show is really a character-driven show. You know, we feel like the steampunk fans will really get involved and get behind it, but it's people that just like episodic television.
Which is very, very popular right now with Game of Thrones, Boardwalk Empire, these type of things. That's how high we want to shoot with this.
What's striking about this project is that you guys have launched this website. You've got all this incredible concept art that looks well beyond the scope of what I'm used to seeing in television.
Yeah.
And you also have this dialogue with the fans going on, the whole steampunk fan community.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of blown away by this very different approach to creating a television series. There's no confirmed network. There's no dates. Maybe speculatively 2014. I've seen on IMDb, but
I think 2014 is going to be our year. But you know, you've got to think that way.
I think that now, you know, just what yesterday, House of Cards is nominated for an Emmy, multiple Emmys, and that's I think an interesting cue. I mean,
it is.
Here's in all reality, an internet-based program that has just gotten an Emmy nomination and multiples, and that I think is really sort of a new trend of how media is just changing in a massive way.
Oh, yeah. New models every other day, it seems like.
Our sort of transmedia approach to Lantern City is really at the core of, we're trying to hit right in the dead center of this new approach, because you've got great character story, but we're also looking at it from the fans. I mean, a show like Firefly, which was such a great show, people are still talking about it today.
Mm-hmm.
Firefly,
one season. As possible.
But it's barely one season.
It baffles me. I loved it when I saw it.
But,
and then why did it not go any further?
Because it didn't have the ratings.
Exactly,
but now,
exactly.
If it was on now,
right,
it would be a totally different story. Because these shows, like even a show like Community, which has a very low rating share, has a huge online following.
Mm-hmm.
So we're trying to look at it from building a structure base first, so that we know it will be successful, as opposed to trying to just hope that people will watch it. We know people will watch it.
Oh yes,
yeah. I mean,
they've expressed that already.
Yeah.
They can't wait. It's it's frustrating. I wish we could bring it sooner, but it takes, you know, it's a lot of work to try to make a project like
certainly
this.
One of the things that we always want to do is make it almost impossible for someone to say to no.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you have all these followers on Facebook, all these followers on Twitter, plus all this community support in conventions like this, plus a great product, how can you say no to that? Especially when you can take great risks on something like House of Cards, which was a very expensive show, wasn't a guarantee, and now, what, 13 Emmy nominations or something like that? I think there's going to be more risk on things. Like
yeah.
I think this would be a great show to binge watch, too.
Absolutely. Well, I like what you guys are saying, because, I mean, as a viewer, I get really frustrated by the shows that get canceled due to, like, the Nielsen's rating system, which is just completely archaic, and I don't know anybody who's ever had a box, so what on earth does that say?
Well, and it's few people that have boxes, but now they're being a little bit more flexible, where they're including, I think, the first 7 days of DVR, amount of viewers.
They're coming around to it.
But we're also looking at this show as not just the fans of genre television or steampunk fans, but at its core, Lantern City is really a simple love story. Sort of the core question of the show is, how far would you go to be with the person that you love the most?
Yeah.
It's about three people from our world that get transported to this alternate Earth, this huge world where Lantern City is sort of the central point.
And they're not together either. I would give them that.
Yeah, they all
separately land there, and now they've got to be. And what I love is the question we've often posed too: that we meet them in this world in today, modern America, and is this the real person here? Or when they get there, and they don't, none of the rules that they grew up with, they knew, apply, and they have to survive that. Is that who they really are? You know what I'm saying? I think you brought this up.
I like to say that each character, if you would boil them down generically, who they are here, present day America, and then you see what they have to become, it's almost the opposite.
Yeah.
And so even though they're working to either get back together, get home, are they the same people? Can they ever go back home? What would happen if after years of being there and having to change so much and then being placed back into their quote-unquote normal lives, what is that going to do to them?
Right.
Well, they're not going to be the same.
No, you can't be. It's almost like going to war or something like that. Exactly. They're going to be the same.
Exactly. That's very interesting. I didn't realize that the fish out of water story was a component as well, and that's a heck of out of water story.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
And I think we just have a great look to it. We've got these great artists, Section Studios, we must mention.
Yeah.
Come up with some really incredible concepts.
They're a concept development company. Cecil Kim and Justin Yun are the two lead artists, and they've done all of our concept work for us, all of our character designs for some of the actors that are attached, Mira Furlan, Raphael Sabarge, John Rhys-Davies, Tony Amendola, Gigi Edley, who was in Farscape. So they've done these great character costume designs. We're continuing to just build all of the elements of this world so that, you know, when we're ready to go to production, which probably will be next year, we'll be in a really, really good place.
Seriously, what I've seen so far, like I said, like kind of baffling the scope that you guys are approaching. And that's really exciting because, I mean, the steampunk fan community has been growing steadily for the past decade.
Absolutely.
And what you guys are doing involving the community directly, it's such a genre that's been created by the fans, appropriating so many different things that it's a really interesting alternative way to do it. And I understand that fans can actually submit concepts to you guys.
Mm-hmm.
How does that process work?
So we basically have a forum that's set up on our website, lanterncitytv.com, and you can go to the workers forum and submit you know photos of your prop designs, lighting designs, weapons, costumes, whatever it is that you create. I mean, like you said, the steampunk community is such a great maker community of artists, and everybody's so imaginative that we wanted to highlight that. So having a place on the website that, you know, you can submit these designs, once we go into production, the best of the best will use in the show itself. So maybe Mira Furlan's character, Martha Ellen Gray, maybe she will have a brooch on that some fan of the show has designed.
Wow.
And we'll highlight that. You know. Yeah, and we'll highlight that, and then we'll be able to show that on the website as well so that we can highlight those artists. I like to sort of think of it as sort of a multinational steampunk gallery space that we're creating.
So you guys aren't taking the concepts and running. You're actually like, this was designed by this person.
Exactly. All the artists retain their own rights to it. We're not manufacturing anything. We're not,
yeah, we're not
going to
be ripping them off.
Not even, but that was a big question in the beginning because it is
an honest one.
It's a unique concept. It's kind of a, you know, the lawyer said, you really don't want to do this. And I said, yeah, I really do.
Yeah.
I think it's a real, and that was always hand in hand.
I was a little dodgy about it at first, too. You know, the first thing that goes, you know, so they're going to lawyer up. And
yeah.
Go, you've used my product, and now I want my money.
Yeah. Right.
You know.
But it's just a way to highlight and showcase these artists.
Yeah, and it's not storylines and characters, so I think it's a little easier.
Yeah, we're not so gadget and that type oriented.
Right.
I think fashion, certainly costuming, is going to be a great deal too, because that adds to who the character is.
Mm-hmm. And it's those intricacies and why close off the imaginative doors of everybody that's out there. We're using that. You know, we want everybody to build it together.
So when it comes to steampunk, when was the first time each of you discovered that genre, and what's been your favorite component of it thus so far?
I would say as far back as when I read 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea as a boy.
Nice.
And any of H.G. Wells, you know, War of the Worlds, these type of things. Those were the sort of the godfathers of steampunk. But I might add also that our version, I think it's open to interpretation. It's a broad canvas.
Certainly.
Steampunk. What is it? You know, everyone has their version.
Yeah.
You know, ours is not the jocular pith-helmeted men with big mustaches going off into the jungle to save fair maidens with ray guns and things like that. You know what I'm saying? Flying in dirigible ships. To get there. That has sort of a humoresque, mocking kind of feel to Victoria. Ours has got a little darker and a more serious edge to it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And we have, the nice thing is, we have these three stratas of society.
Yes.
The ruling class, the Grey Empire, so we can highlight a specific look of steampunk in that class. We have our worker class, so we can have sort of that look, and then we have an underground, this growing sort of rebellious underground, and that's when we can really get crazy and put in the spider hands and the, you know, anything else we want to think of, and what people think of,
Thomas
too.
Thomas Williford and his Brute Force.
Brute Force Studios. He's one of our creative collaborators. We have several creative collaborators that we're working with on the steampunk side. Tom Williford, Tom Spanwell, who designed our Lantern City Guard helmet and mask, which is sort of the first official prop of the show.
Mm.
Dr. Grimm has also been a help, along with Art Donovan. So we've had, you know, we have artists that are currently working, top artists that are steampunk in their field, helping us so that we don't go off the rails. We don't want to be the guys that screw up,
that,
you know,
the
like the Hollywood yo-yos that kill this genre.
Best I can recall, this is the first major major thing produced in Hollywood under the banner of steampunk.
Correct.
There are some others, and I think that's good. They're starting to show. I think steampunk's time has come.
Right.
To finally break mainstream.
But nobody's really done it. Yeah. It's, you know, there's little elements of it, but nobody's sort of fully gone in on this is steampunk.
Right.
And, you know, for me, I mean, to answer your question, for me, you know, I wrote a story, sort of visual novella when I was in college about a clockwork robot. And that's sort of what got me involved and interested in sort of from things from a visual standpoint.
I always liked it. I didn't even know what to call it. But when I saw it, I was always fascinated because I'm a history buff, and that's an incredible time of history and an alternate history.
Yeah.
Buff, you know. I used to read a lot of Harry Turtledove and all those current people.
Yeah.
So you know what I'm saying? We all kind of came to a different direction. So as soon as Trevor came to me about this thing and that, about develop this thing, as soon as he said a steampunk thing, I was on. He had me at steampunk.
Yeah, Bruce, when did you get involved in this project?
What's it been, about 2 years ago now?
Year and a half?
I don't know, we hammered something out about like 10 that. Hours of ideas. At my place with
it was a storyline that I had come up with a couple years back,
and just started hammering
sort of honed it into something, and then Bruce and I were working on a pilot together. I was producing, and Bruce was one of the stars of the pilot, a comedy western called Smokewood, Nevada, and sort of like a cross between Tombstone and The Office. Quite hilarious.
Sounds like The Office.
Yeah, that's quite hilarious. And
I want to see that.
And yeah, we do too. And so maybe look for Lifetime. Stranger Things, yeah. So we worked together on this and came up with some additional concepts. Bruce helped build some other characters. We put sort of a package together, and then I had worked with Matt years ago on a project that we both won an Emmy for called Terror in Tulsa. It was a documentary about the 1921 Tulsa, Oklahoma race riots, of all things.
Whoa.
See how all these disparate things come together, and then you end up with this perfect team. Absolutely.
So early, when was that?
1921.
That's good.
Yeah. So early enough.
Was fun.
Yeah. Post fun. But then we brought Matt in, and Matt really was our missing piece, I think.
And then, I've said it before, then, you know, this guy had the ability to, the very things we were talking about, we were just shooting out there and trying to figure out, he put it on paper.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you're reading my mind. But no, I visually saw it. I mean, he obviously brought his own take to it. But the characters that we came up with, those three, four characters, they're right on the money.
So we're
captured
in a...
and put them, made them real.
And Matt built out the world to 40...
We've got a wonderful pilot.
Yeah, I mean, I built out the world so much that we need to have a prequel book, so...
And you said
a prequel book.
You have a pilot filmed already for
No. We have a wonderful pilot.
Written.
That's
written.
The script.
Okay.
And we've got the first four
episodes.
Right.
Yeah.
Just to give a real taste of where that thing would go after the pilot, you know.
But as we
these books help, I think they help still build an audience. This is the background, the grounding of where did it come from, you know.
And Rise will be, as of this this episode being put out, available online, or
by the time the episode airs, it should be on Amazon and in specialty bookshops also.
Very cool.
Hopefully, this is the first of a trilogy of books that sort of lead us up to the series. And this book is about Isaac Foster Gray, who created Lantern City. So the book takes place,
coming of age story.
Yeah, 100 years before the television series. So it gives viewers a really good picture into what's happening.
It's always good to see a world created that has that much depth to it.
You got to. That's
and that was what Matt did. I mean, Matt built so much on the front end, and then we started talking about, we really need to get something out so that fans can really start to understand, while we're building the show, can understand what this world is about. And Matt said, oh, by the way,
I just happen to have here
seven different novels in the back of my bag.
Well, he has a family, they never see him.
They see me hunched over a computer. That's
what I remember. Dad, he was this hunched figure that sat in the corner.
But with the book, we didn't want to have it a requirement that people needed to read it to understand the series, but we wanted to have the world built out so that we would never run into the Star Wars episodes 1 through 3 dilemma, where it's like, we're going to do the prequels now, and like, this doesn't feel like what it is, but these books feel like this is a natural building to the actual series. So it's really, I mean, it's fantastic fun to write. And to answer your question from a long time ago, I was also a Jules Verne fan as a kid, but as I got a little bit older and I read the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, I think that really keyed me back into, or actually keyed me into what steampunk could be. So
yeah. Well, Matt, what do you think is the most dynamic and original aspect of Lantern City and this steampunk universe?
That's a really great question. I mean, I think what we're just trying to do is take a very niche science fiction topic or subject and bring it to as many people as possible. And that's why when I started writing it, I avoided the terms technobabble. So like the Star Trek thing, technobabble and try to avoid oversaturation of gadgetry and stuff. So really, as I say, like if you would take the story and put it somewhere else in a non-science fiction setting, it would still be awesome television or it'd still be an awesome book. But then when you add the science fiction elements, it just brings in so many other things. It's like 3 years ago, I would never say my wife would watch a fantasy television series, and her favorite show is Game of Thrones. And why is that? Because she loves the characters and the storylines, and there happen to be some dragons and some you know magic people coming out of vaginas. So it's like, okay, so this is cool.
Wow. I do have to go look at that.
You're not caught up. You're not caught up
on the show. But okay, another element.
Yeah, okay. But I think that
we could have that in our.
We could. Quickly. We could.
I don't. Mechanical.
We're not having that happen.
Okay. Okay.
But the thing is, really wanting to take, you know, make science fiction easy to grasp for
accessible.
People.
Yeah.
Accessible, people that wouldn't normally,
you know. Yeah. And where they wouldn't even think. And then also, like, the larger goal is when people ask what is steampunk, they'll say it's Lantern City.
That's it.
Cool. So if people wanted to get involved, listeners and fans wanted to get involved, they would go to lanterncitytv.com.
Sign up to be a citizen.
And you can also go to our Facebook page and mm-hmm. our Twitter page as well. Lantern City TV is the Facebook page. Same thing for Twitter. And that's the thing that I think is the most important right now. We're not at a nice period of critical mass where we've got 120,000 Facebook fans. We've got 500,000 Twitter followers. We need to keep adding to those numbers because that's really where you'll find networks standing up at attention. And that's really one of our cast members, Raphael Sabarge, said at another panel once, liking us, following us, it's a vote. You know, it's showing network, it's telling network executives, I will watch this show. And yeah. that's the most important thing right now. And also to buy Rise, because I think everybody's going to enjoy it. And the more we sell, the faster the show will get on the air.
And the faster the other books will come out, too.
Yeah. So we just keep the story going.
So I've actually read the novel Rise, picked up a copy at Comic-Con, and we'll link to it where you can pick it up on this episode's page, along with all the other key links for Lantern City. Rise is, I wouldn't necessarily call it a novel, and I'm not really sure what the count for a novella officially qualifies as. It's an interesting thing that I've never seen before.
It's just under 100 pages, since they said that it's 26 images. The book itself is 121 pages.
It's very much like an accessory to a show Bible for developing a series. Mm. What Matt wrote here is a very good story with some cool characters and a lot of neat stuff happening.
Nice.
It's just not very well written, but I don't know exactly what his background is, but it's very, it has all the bullet points are there. Everything's there. But the structure of the story, the way it's written, has a complete lack of metaphor, and all the world building is very fact oriented. Everything's very bullet pointed in the story.
Mm. Seems like it's meant to be like almost like a companion. Yeah, like a little handout
right.
Before you get into the thick of it.
What makes it awkward is that it's in the guise of being a novel. So it just kind of feels sort of amateurish, which is too bad because he's clearly very good at what he does.
Hmm.
I think Rise is really neat. And if you like the concept of Lantern City, read it. It's a quick read anyhow. But just don't go into it expecting like a full-blown novel. It has like a framing device that then switches to a journal, but it's not written like a journal, if that's any kind of a clue as to how sort of imbalanced it is. The pieces don't fit together, but the story and the characters and everything that's happening is really compelling. I want to see the television show that this book informs. In fact, I'd love to see the story of Rise committed to film or video of some kind. It's really cool. You see the pre-industrial age of this world happen, and it's a very normal place, but then all of a sudden this technology shows up. And also you get the first hint of how there are sort of cross-dimensional rifts that cause sort of problems.
Interesting. That's cool.
So do you think someone who wants to watch Lantern City should definitely read Rise?
Absolutely, yeah. I simply offer this caution going into it, and I think Matt's written a very cool story here. It's just very much a product of the television writing system. You know, once the drafts are in and once the story is blocked out, the dialogue gets punched up by a bunch of different people and it all goes to the machine, you end up with a really solid product. This dictates the groundwork for a very cool show that hopefully we'll see, because if you go to lanterncity.tv, you're going to see a lot of concept art that looks well beyond the scope of anything you've ever seen on television before.
And I love that what they were talking about with House of Cards.
Mm-hmm.
because I loved watching that on Netflix. And it was amazing watching that and seeing something of this caliber that really felt like it was Game of Thrones level of production on Netflix, something specifically just for a computer, for internet. I'm excited that this might be the age that we're in where a show like Lantern City could get picked up by Netflix.
I agree completely.
Well, something that affects Heavy might also, I don't want to say be a benefit, but if you're dealing with a world that stylized, you might be able to get away with more things without making it look fake, if I'm making any sense. Game of Thrones isn't a good example because Game of Thrones feels so freaking real when you watch it. That's like a lot of physical stuff. Whereas this, I don't want to go George Lucas on everybody, but it seems like you're going to need a lot of green screen. You're going to need a lot of CG models of airships and stuff like that. Totally. But
it
I think
just feels fake and forced.
Yeah, but it doesn't necessarily make it unfilmable. Is what I think I'm trying to say.
Did anyone here see Sky Captain the World of Tomorrow?
I did. Yeah.
Sky Captain was cool.
Yeah, where it's that was, and I think that's kind of the feel.
That's what I'm talking about. Where it's like the aesthetic of the way it looks, Sky Captain was very, I don't want to say blurry, but you know, it had a glow to it. It had a very old-fashioned look.
Something that's so stylized that the completely computer-generated component of it doesn't feel awkward. Speed Racer falls in the same
category.
Right. Where it's just part of the way they're telling the story, not just like, oh, it's just crappy-looking CG. It's like, no, I'm sure they're well aware that you can have crappy-looking CG, but the way you film it can make it look really cool.
Right.
It's not like it's an asylum film.
No. But Sky Captain's a great example because that was done on a PC in someone's garage.
Yeah, like everything in Sky Captain was done in somebody's garage behind a green screen.
Yeah, and the green screen was like literally like the size of your living room wall. Like it was not a studio. It's like there's production stills of Jude Law and Gwyneth Paltrow and you're like, oh look, there's a green screen. Then you cut to like the wide angle and there's just like there's nothing beyond. It's just the wall. It's just the room is empty and it's like, oh wow, that how do I get Jude Law to be in my movie, in my living room? Like it was so easy to do.
Kay, you sent me a link to a Kickstarter that has been backed. Can you explain this project?
I was just scrolling through the Steampunk Facebook page because I follow it, and they had a link to this Kickstarter for a 1909 period film about cryptozoology. And it's just that...
I love it. Keep going. Steampunk cryptozoology does sound pretty awesome, I gotta say.
There, when we went to GMX, there was that...
Yeah, it was kind of like a pop-up exhibit of a traveling... I guess you'd call him a sculptor. A guy who designs an exhibit based around steampunk technology.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like the steampunk isn't just a fictional world like Star Wars.
Right.
It can be whatever you want it to be. Like it's, you know, we've already said, oh, it's like sort of Victorian era or whatever. That does narrow it down. But
it's an atmosphere. It's not necessarily a thing. It's like a
It's not one story.
Right.
It's your story.
I mean, because like Victorian era, that's Civil War era for America.
Right. Hence Wild Wild West.
Yeah.
I like how we were like praising Sky Captain but degrading Wild Wild West.
I'm not degrading. I'm just saying it's probably the best example of steampunk.
Some of the coolest things that I've seen of steampunk has actually been at Burning Man. Whenever I look through like Burning Man pictures, like I have this
mobile house.
Oh my god, yes. People like will take bicycles and turn them into like Victorian manors and you're just like,
how do?
Are you talking about space and time compression? What exactly? Explain. Well,
you know,
there's
Burning,
like a three-story, I don't even know what the hell it's on. It's like a fucking sand crawler, practically. Like, but literally, it's like a Victorian house that they drive around there.
And it's got like a kitchen, and it's got like a little foyer and everything, and it's just, it's incredible. I love the idea of really crazy Victorian mobile houses. You know, like I'll look online and look through all these like pictures and they go crazy.
So we're going back to Howl's Moving Castle, Cauldron Punk.
Yeah. Well, no, it's very much like it's, I don't want to say it's like steam powered, but they very use the steampunk aesthetic when they build some of these things, and it's just incredible. It's one of my favorite things.
Interlocking cogs and penny farthing and all that stuff.
Well, I think one of the houses, I think it was from a few years ago, was a bus, but they had taken out the engine and put in like a steam engine. Like it was actually a steam powered. I didn't think it went very far in the desert.
One would not suspect. Yeah, the power tends to evaporate out there.
But that was really cool. And so that's pretty awesome.
There's an entire subsect of the maker community that's like their specialty is steampunk. They're pretty fucking out of their mind crazy. It's just,
it's more
the amount of effort, you know, that they put into it. I mean, Jake von Slatt, for example, I think he may or may not have actually been in. I know he at least retrofitted a bus to stylize it completely steampunk. He'll do stuff like actually replicate a type of forge used back in like the time period from scrap, steampunkify, you know, computers and keyboards and all sorts of stuff.
You're talking about the maker community. Steampunk is generally, as far as, you know, props and such, an aesthetic rather than a
But there
a
are some
thing.
Inventors out there too that subscribe to the steampunk community.
All right, so John, are you saying that this guy develops actual working steampunk devices?
He does things like he'll make like steampunk computers and steampunk keyboards, steampunk lamps. He
some
does
of the
a
stuff
lot of
he
other...
does is aesthetic, right? But right. some of it is actually fully functional, which is the crazy part about him. I mean, obviously, you know, if you're going to make a steampunk computer, then you have to go with Babbage's difference engine number two, right?
Right.
And incidentally, that's of course to me really like steampunk is the alternate reality where they actually built that thing and realized, holy shit, we can calculate stuff that we could simply never figure out before.
The only Babbages, you know, I know sold me Secret of Mana in 1996 or whatever.
Charles Babbage in Victorian England with Ada Lovelace.
Lady Ada.
They theorized what would later become the concept of a computer. That's the differential.
I'm familiar
Lady
with
Ada, the first programmer.
Yeah, I'm familiar with Lady Ada's work.
He was the person who came up with the idea of the differential engine, and she devised what would be the first theoretical programming language.
Okay, gotcha.
So that is,
you know, in the
differential
1800s.
Engine. That is straight up steampunk computer right there.
So in reality, they basically thought up how a computer would think, like
back
a programming
language.
Back in the
late 1800s.
That's pretty cool.
Using nothing more than just mechanics. He had the designs for this thing, but it was never built to completion.
It's one of those things like where Da Vinci had a bunch of designs that he could never finish up,
like robots and airplanes,
because he
and stuff.
Didn't have the technology to follow through with it. They had the same issue.
The difference is that there are actually a handful of them that have actually been machined and created today, and they actually work. Hmm. You know, Da Vinci's helicopter would not have worked, right?
Right.
But like Babbage's machine, it just would have been fucking expensive as all hell, because you have to machine each individual like complicated type of gear. I mean, you know, it's not like a standard shop part, right? They all have to be able to work together. You need absolute precision because it's a computer, you know, any noise in the signal and you get garbage. And they're really a beautiful thing to watch. It's just the most interesting and crazy thing as you see like all of these gears spinning together. I mean, it's like DNA helix shit going in there practically.
What do these things do? Is it just a computation machine? Like,
basically.
Is it just like a calculator?
It's basically a massive calculator.
Huh. That's pretty cool.
Well, you know, with a programming language, you can make it do whatever, right? But yeah, the output's all numbers. I mean, we don't have no computer screens back in 1800s.
I mean, but I can't play Pong on it, is what I'm saying. Like,
you could play Pong if you didn't mind having to calculate where the ball was.
I could play a text-based adventure, right? Like,
maybe.
But
you'd
this
have
is
to
back
convert
in the day
it all back from numbers, though, and that'd be the problem.
You guys are sliding down into a SciTech hole, and though it's been way too long since we had a SciTech episode, we do need to wrap this episode.
Yeah, I'm about to start rambling about Von Neumann. We got to move forward.
I want to say something about Lantern City, though. I am looking at these drawings, and oh my god, I wish 3D TV was a real, like, actual real thing, as opposed to, like, a figment of people's imaginations, because if they had the budget to actually render this shit, it would make people actually care about 3D.
That's true.
This is nuts.
A private conversation John and I have been having lately is the fact that 3D television is more or less on the dead side, and not just because it's expensive.
And not just because, you know, we're saying so because we're a bunch of douchebags or something.
ESPN has dropped it. BBC has dropped it.
And that's pretty much all she wrote, as it were.
Yeah.
It's pretty impractical.
But I will have to say this. My 3D stuff, when I've been playing them video games, my accuracy increases. I just get better at it.
That's cool.
So, yeah, no, I'm just saying, like, 3D isn't completely smoke and mirrors. It's just so much better when you're actually interacting with it. That's the only point. If you're doing any, like, 3D work or 3D gaming, virtual reality, 3D glasses, all that stuff is actually really, really cool. And I personally cannot wait for the Oculus Rift to actually be, like, a real thing as opposed to a developer's trick.
Right. We'll get there eventually.
It's like the same thing with the movies when they have 3D movies that come out, whereas, like, Pacific Rim used it in such a way that it actually enhanced the story instead of being a detractor and annoying. It's not like Grown Ups 2 3D. It's actually...
Jesus, did that happen?
No, it wasn't a 3D.
Thank
no.
Thank God.
I'm surprised.
Anyway, we gotta put a bow on this Victorian collar here.
The brass bow that is impractical.
Let's cut to some more music. Let's say sayonara. So what do you got for us, Hex?
Well, based off the request of Mr. John West, we have Automatonic Electronic Harmonics by Steam Powered Giraffe.
I believe Kay was the first to say we had to play Steam Powered
Giraffe. Said we had to play Steam Powered Giraffe, but he specifically requested that. But song, yes, yeah. Okay. Kay was like, dude, Steam Powered Giraffe.
Okay, cool. Well, thanks so much for listening, guys. If you want a Nerdy Show microsode, this microsode turned into a full episode, as
Sorry.
You can hear.
Sorry.
I ain't apologizing. It was fun. So your microsode might win us over enough that we talk for longer than 15 minutes. But if you want a microsode, then you just have to support Nerdy Show. We're a listener-supported podcast and network, and we cannot exist without you financing us every month.
Give us your money.
Every $100 mark is your opportunity to get in there and demand that we cover a topic. The great thing about microsodes is you pitch us the topic, and then some magic can happen. You might get Bruce Boxleitner in your episode. Yep. It could happen.
Some cauldron punk may occur.
I don't think you can beat that, though.
Before we go, we got to talk about some of those fabulous people who help keep Nerdy Show alive.
Yay! Ooh, you are defibrillators.
We surpassed our baseline goal for July at $406, and that's thanks to Big Bad Shadow Man, Red Menace, Brent Brichard, Nathaniel Kraft, Vetus Clemency, Mauron, Matthew Shoemaker, Anna Barich, Mr. Jamir, James Altman II, Jeffrey Voss, Barry I, Kevin Weiss, who pitched this steampunk episode, Dr. Gamer Scientist, Zombie Pops, Hugh O'Donnell, Berto Elcon, and Anique Zimmer.
Yay, all of you.
And some
thanks.
Of you. Yeah, big, big thanks. And every little bit counts. And if you support us, well, we send you cool stuff in your email. And some of these cool people send us some messages. Matthew Shoemaker said, "And then I heard that magnificent call echoing throughout the irradiated wasteland of an earth that once was, reverberating across the domain of the masters of old. Lightning dogs."
Oh, God.
For a moment there, I thought it was going to turn into Night Vale.
You're listening to Night Vale.
He's one of the pack.
Yeah, he is. There's a lot of supporters of the pack here. For example, Berto Elcon, who said, "Y'all don't go broke on me. I need those nourishing nuggets of nerdity. Also some lightning dogs."
Lone wolves no longer.
Kevin Weiss said, "This is not nearly as much as I should give, but it's for everything, especially lightning dogs." Oh!
Welcome to the pack.
Mr. Jamir said, "I've been listening since fall of 2010 and telling everybody I can about you guys," which is great because word of mouth and getting new people in a Nerdy Show is a good move. "First time I can actually chip in, long overdue. Thank you so much, man. It's good to have you with us all this time." James Altman II, who was in the audience of Nerdy Show Live. Yay. And if you haven't checked out Nerdy Show Live, it's on YouTube right now. You can just search for it, Nerdy Show Live. Or find the episode page on nerdyshow.com. There'll be a link to it. It is our live experience in front of an audience at a nerd bar called the Geek Easy in Orlando.
It was something else.
some crazy stuff happens. Galdap from D&D makes an in-person appearance. This is something other Microsode contributors can look forward to. We actually did a Microsode live in front of an audience. And when more Nerdy Show Live happens, that could happen to your topic. Just saying. It could happen. We do plan on making that a staple for future Nerdy Show Lives. So this is the pilot episode. It's a bit rough around the edges, but
bit slimy around the edges as well.
Yeah, also slimy and crusty and everything you'd want from a show. Like, maybe. Most things
hopefully.
You would want. Yeah. It's good. Check it out. Let us know what you think. Anyway, James Altman said, "Awesome shows, everyone. Keep up the good work." Jeffrey Voss said, "I survived the Steam summer sale, so I'm tossing some cash your way. Thanks for great podcast. Much love." Barry I said, "I've been catching up thanks to taking Calc 4 over at the community college. Having lost my job made it difficult to find time to listen. I missed you guys."
Aw.
Is he punishing himself for losing his job by taking Calc 4? I'm just saying, Calc 4 is hard.
Props to them, man.
I tried advanced calculus, and all I saw was toroidal coordinates, and then I passed out.
Dr. Gamer Scientist said, "My regular donation for both June and July. Keep up the good work, guys."
Yay.
And Zombie Pop said, "Boom. Thanks for all the stuff you guys do. Love Zombie Pops."
Yay, Zombie Pops.
Hugh O'Donnell said, "Hey, guys. Swinging in for a last minute donation to say thanks for another month of great podcasting. And thanks to Flame On for exposing me to my new podcasting nerd crush, Glenn Weldon. Winky face. So yes, thanks to all of you awesome people for keeping us alive and keep on keeping us alive. We need your love.
We less than three you.
Yes.
We less than three you.
Cax, we more than three you. We greater than three you. Anyway. Bye, I'm Cap.
Bye, I'm Hex.
Bye, I'm Doug.
Bye, I'm Kristen.
Bye, I'm John.
Bye, I'm Kay.
Here's Steam Powered Giraffe.
Ka-chunk.
Ever since the first time I opened my eyes, I've awakened to the same thing. Other automaton friends roughly built like me. The first time I opened my mouth to speak, a steam escaped to the air, and black oil dripped from my lips and onto the ground. What daylight struck a chord with my photoreceptors, night greeted me with a sea of stars. Our eyes all flash of blues and greens through the night. It's just our automatonic electronic harmonics. People are soaring, the hallways exploring, higher than they've ever been before. But we are still down here, feet on the ground, near what will rise us up with the rest. Our quixotic, stock and robotic, mechanical in nature all the time. And pulses are firing in our head wiring, guiding all our actions and being. It's just our automatonic electronic. Skin is cold to the touch and made from the earth. They say, oh, it's so down. But baby, it's sound makes your worries cease to pound. And oh, maybe it's alright, cause baby, it fights for some time just to be held tight. And oh, maybe it's not wrong, cause it sings a lovely song, one that drifts on for so long. And no, maybe let's not lie, its eyes are alive and pointed up, shining right to the sky. It's just our automatonic electronic harmonic epic and so. Electronic.
thanks for listening to Nerdy Show. Nerdy Show is made possible by A Comic Shop, Nerdapalooza, and the generous support of listeners like you. As listener-supported entertainment, we rely on you to keep this and other shows on the Nerdy Show Network alive by telling a friend, rating and reviewing us on iTunes, or making a contribution in our monthly support drives. Any size contribution gets you exclusive Nerdy Show voxophones and pictograms. Just go to nerdyshow.com/support to chip in. For more episodes of Nerdy Show, as well as other fine programs, community forums, kinetoscopes, articles, and more, head over to nerdyshow.com. You can subscribe to all Nerdy Show Network podcasts via the iTunes Store. And for the latest news, follow us on all your favorite social networks.
Figured out what Slave Punk is.
Oh, God.
300, the movie.
Accurate.
They used human beings for transportation. That you can't get any worse than
that. That's, there you go. We found Slave Punk.
Hello.
Join the steampunk convention. Wait, no.
Hey, I've got a used car for you.
Take 96.